Hey everybody, welcome into another episode of the Make Comics Podcast, the show where we talk about the nuts and bolts of making comics, as well as the many travels of Heather Antos, who has been international lately, including the Fan Expo and Boston Comic Con. So if you got a chance to see Heather there, I know, Heather, you had a number of panels in addition to being on site, and it sounded like a great and very fun long trip.
It was incredible. So much fun. I actually did meet a lot of listeners to the Comics Experience podcast. A lot of people did come up and thanked us for, you know, our insight. And it was really, really awesome to meet all of you. So I know you can't see me, but I am sitting in my studio at home waving to you all. And
furiously drawing penguins. That's
yes.
if you don't follow Heather on social media, you can go check out her Twitter and Instagram and see her many commissions that she has done in addition to everything else. And I don't know how you find the time for all of it. So sometime we'll have to do an episode of multitasking at a convention.
There you go. That would actually be a really good one. I almost tweeted. I didn't end up doing it because I wanted to use my powers for good and not evil. But I almost tweeted out, you know, whoever brings me coffee gets a free commission.
Remember that, folks. I've seen many, many posts on social media where people will say things like that, or, oh, to the fan who brought me donuts. So you can definitely bribe folks. That's an easy in. Hey, here's your donuts. One of the first times I met folks that I actually knew through Comics Experience, I took cookies that my wife had made. I believe it was to New York Comic Con, and I just gave friends cookies, and it was like you showed up just dropping $100 bills. It's like, oh my God, you're giving me free cookies on the con floor?
Yeah,
it's the little things.
Oh, and it makes a huge difference. Like, we will, as creators, we will remember you as our favorite fan.
So take
the
care
rest of our lives.
Take care of the people you like to read, and take care of your friends, and That's it. That's the show. Thanks for listening. Heather, Bloodshot number one, coming out.
All right. All right.
It sounded like a fun time. And you said off air the next show you're doing is New York. So you have a little bit of recovery time so you can make it through the New York Marathon Comic Con.
Exactly. Yeah. And actually, I will be there with Comics Experience as well. Andy and I did a panel in Boston about pitching, actually. And I'm going to be on the Comics Experience, one of the Comics Experience panels at New York Comic Con. So I'll be there in full Comics Experience. I don't know. I can't. It's too early. But I will be there. I will be there repping comics and Comics Experience.
It's too early, too much travel, too many penguins. Well, yeah, that's great. And I think that's an exclusive. I don't think we talked about panels yet. So that's why you tune in. You hear those big New York Comic Con exclusive announcements from writer-editor Heather Antos. It's all the value of Comics Experience, including the topic for today that we were going to talk about is what happens after the pitch, which is something I should have gone back through the archives to see if we've ever really addressed that I thought was a really neat thing to talk about. So it's the what happens after the pitch. And this episode specifically is going to focus on more of the IP side, like working with somebody on a work-for-hire side, like Heather's background at Marvel and Valiant specifically. And Heather, I know you can speak a lot to the creator-owned side of things too, since you work on some books that are outside of the work-for-hire world. But this we thought would be a good breakdown for you to talk about what happens after the pitch. And this is, I guess we can set up the premises, assuming somebody's been invited to pitch or submits a pitch and gets the pitch in to an editor or wherever starting point you think is going to have the most value for listeners.
Yeah, so I would say, let's say, you know, Marvel, DC, Valiant, IDW, Dynamite, you know, any publisher that has IP, reaches out to you and you pitch, or reaches out to you to pitch. And either it's, you know, they come to you and they're like, tell me, you know, pitch me your dream Wolverine story, or they come to you with, you know, I have been given the task by my boss that I need a Deadpool versus Old Man Logan book. I'm giving you the status quo, basically.
Right.
And so you that experience is normally you get one of two things. You get one, almost completely no background information of just use this character, go nuts, which, you know, I've heard two different ways from writers on that, where writers will like, oh my gosh, I love the freedom, and oh my gosh, I'm so terrified of the freedom. Like some people play better with structure, and that's, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. But then there are other times, and usually this has to do with, you know, the more high profile characters that there's a lot going on with, or certain storylines that are woven in and out with other characters or other lines of books, you're going to be given that structure. You're going to be given that status quo of, you know, XYZ characters need to be in this. We need these beats to be hit. You cannot do blah, 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 blah. Here are all of these weird requirements. Make a good story out of it. Which happens a lot.
Sure.
Especially with the bigger IP, your Star Wars, your Marvels, your DC, where there is, you know, 80 or 40 years of continuity.
Yeah.
And movies and TVs and games and 70 comics coming out a month.
get on the train.
Right. There's a lot of moving parts. And, you know, it's not your job as a writer to be completely familiar with everything that's happening in the universe. That's the editor's job. It's the editor's job to inform you and answer your questions and all these things. But it obviously is helpful to be aware of this. So you pitch.
Right.
You send in your pitch. You might even send some editors. I typically like to tell writers, you know, I don't want them to do like a 5-page write-up for nothing. So I typically tell them to send me like 2 or 3 paragraphs of different ideas that you'd like to do.
And just kind of a quick question there.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes when I quote things for clients in the world that I live in on the production side, it can be kind of back of napkin math. Like, I think it'll be this, and it'll be this cool thing, and we'll do this cool thing. It'll be very informal. At that point, mm-hmm. are you looking for something that's a little more like, this is my third draft, it's a little more polished, or is it really like, hey, just spitball me some ideas, and then from there, we'll refine?
That's what I prefer to do. Actually, I just had a first call with a writer this week on pitching for a new project. And, you know, I'm giving the writer, you know, these are our needs as a company.
Right.
These are our needs for the character. These are our needs for the universe, which are 3 very different things.
Yeah.
You know, the character has their status quo, the universe has its status quo, and then the company has needs for the product, be it a one-shot, a mini-series, an ongoing, is it an A-list book, B-list, C-list, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
How many eyes are on this product? Because that also changes the type of story you're going to tell. And what I always suggest is, you know, in a week or two, shoot me an email with 2 or 3 different ideas. Because the last thing I want is a writer to fall in love with an idea, write a 15-page, you know, document, Bible, whatever, send it to me, their heart's like completely in it, and me to read the first sentence and be like, there's no way this can happen.
Right.
You know, it doesn't matter how good it is. I might be absolutely love that story, but I'm sorry, we can't kill the main character on the first page. It's not going to happen.
Right.
And so I like to, you know, start small and then branch out. And that does 2 different things. One, that ensures that the idea that we're then going to push forward to my bosses to try and get greenlit is in as best of shape as it can be.
Yeah.
But also, especially if this is someone that I've never really worked with before, this gives me more time to collaborate with them to see how they take direction, how they are on deadlines, what they are to collaborate with, how they take compromise, how they take notes, before we get to that, you know, full on plot breakdown pitch. Which, you know, it's the interview process. It's if I'm going to be working with this person for the next year, this, two to four week pitch process is going to tell me a lot about what that would be like.
And is a big takeaway there just kind of the, I might use the wrong term, the flexibility and ability to work within the parameters of, hey, this is everything you've described, this IP world where we got to hit these deadlines, we got this other tie-in, we got to kind of think about peripherally, and these are the things we're going to do because it's this is the story that came, out of the editorial conversations. Mm-hmm. And, hey, we really thought it was going to be Deadpool goes to Hawaii, but instead it's going to be Deadpool goes to Antarctica. Mm-hmm. And seeing how people are able to roll with that.
No, 100%. Because, as much as we might all love these characters, you can't be precious with them. And you can't be, you can be precious with your creator owns. I hope you're precious with your creator owns.
Right.
You created them, but, work for hire is just that, it's work for hire.
Yeah.
And not to say that this is a job. If you won't do it, I'll wipe my hands of you and find someone else. obviously, I care about these characters too, and I'm passionate about them too. And we all should be passionate about them. But it is a job.
Right.
And so how do you take direction? How do you work with other people? How do you work with some of the crazy punches that can come your way? Like, what happens sometimes in real world events, can drastically overnight change what you can or cannot do in your story. Just because of political landscapes or, different things that happen. A school shooting might have been a big part of your storyline, but then a massive school shooting happens. We can't print this book anymore. We can't tell this story.
Yeah.
How do you roll with that? How do you change that?
Yeah, it makes sense. It makes sense that that's the way the process works. I think so much of that work for hire world, and I think if folks have experience in other creative services fields, and maybe they don't, a lot of times it is the all the examples run through my head. It is the, hey, we're here and everything kind of fell apart, so we got to make this work. And not because anybody wanted it to fall apart, but because sometimes it is it's exactly like you said, it's this external outside factor that you got to be able to roll with and go, cool, well, this is what I think we could do. And we have the conversation, and it's a kind of a combo of skills of knowing, hey, this is not the end of the world. At the end of the day, we can still make this very cool thing. Here's how I think we can make it. Everybody can collaborate and play nice. And yeah, it would have been great to do the other thing, but unfortunately that's in the rear view now, and moving forward, this is the goal. Here's where we go.
Absolutely. And the thing is too, is this can happen at any point in production. It's not just during the pitch, because that's a thing I think that a lot of less experienced creators might not necessarily realize is it does, even if the pitch is approved, the story can change at any moment.
Yeah.
The pitch is approved means, yes, you have the job, and yes, you are writing the book or you're drawing the book or doing the book. But that doesn't mean that the company's needs will change or the character needs will change or the universe needs won't change, throughout that process. That can shift at any point. And even as you're, working with your editor and actually writing the script, those, like any idea, it can be shaped and continue to be sculpted. And what you initially pitched when you're writing the script might not actually be the best thing anymore.
Yeah. Right.
So that stuff can constantly be shifting and changing. As things go on, nothing is ever set in stone, I think, is the biggest takeaway. but it also shouldn't be. I've worked with creators, both in creator owned and in work for hire, where this seemed like a good idea in the pitch, but when we get to the script, when we see how it all plays out in the moment with dialogue, it just isn't working, and it just isn't what's best for the story. And there are other ways to tell the story and be more impactful. And I'll have writers come back to me and like, yeah, but this is what was pitched. And I'm like, cool. Like, I thought I really liked chocolate as my favorite flavor, but then I tried cookie dough and holy shit, my world changed. Like, things should be able to grow.
For sure.
And you shouldn't restrict yourself just because it was something that was previously approved, I
And
think.
I had a creative conversation yesterday with someone I've worked with professionally who's in a new position. And in our conversation, we were pitching creative concepts to a client that I've worked with for years that she's just met through me. And it was a great meeting overall, but it was one of those moments too where it reminded me of, oh, this is exactly why you collaborate, because we were playing off each other in that same thing that you were talking about and kind of feeling it out, and got to that really good idea that neither of us had at the beginning, and to get through it in the conversation where you don't necessarily know like where it originated from, but boy, do we really like this as an idea. And that's those moments where you're like, this is why I do this, is to get in with somebody, dig around a little bit under the hood, and go, oh, what if we said this and we did this? Yeah, and what if it did that? I was like, you think it could just be that? Wow, that's even better. And just to get to that end of, and obviously sometimes things don't work out in creative collaboration, but I think a lot of the times it is just kind of being open to that. Hey, this is while we're talking, this is where the thing is going to go. And then maybe when you actually, like you said, get into production on the thing, for whatever reason, it goes a different direction. Just to know that you're always still aiming for that same goal of an outcome that's the best outcome you can get to.
Yeah, I mean, of course, there are going to be certain stories where, it's the death of Wolverine, so, we can't. He, I guess he has to die, and this, shit, it's what the book is called. We really shoot ourselves in with this one, but
I liked it, but he didn't actually die.
right. Well, it's true, he didn't. Spoilers, but.
Oh no! What have you done? Have all the comics been a lie?
It's well, no one stays dead unless you're Uncle Ben, right?
Oh.
There are going to be some stories, and I feel like those are the ones that are more universe connected, right? Those are going to be your event stuff, or things like Star Wars, where the Star Wars comics tie into the film continuity. You do have a direction that you have to head in because there is a next chapter. We've already seen what happens. So there are going to be certain elements that you can't necessarily change. But for me as a creator, I always find those elements, call them like the pillars of the story, if you will. They're what's supporting the rest of the story, to be almost a fun puzzle of how can I still tell a unique and clever and impactful story, even if I'm bookended with things that I'm stuck with.
Right, the parameters that you can't change, and that, not to keep banging the box metaphor, but I do feel like that's why boxes are great sometimes. And like you said, it's fitting that puzzle together to know, well, I got 22 pages and I got to do these things and I can't do these things, and oh yeah, this is about Darth Vader and people know who Darth Vader is and where he goes, so we got to do these things. And yeah.
Well, and that's always the thing, right? Like, there's I feel like as comic fans, we all have terrible chips on our shoulders now. We're all super jaded. You get these stories like with Star Wars or with, Batman or Captain America, where something happens and everyone's just like, yeah, well, everyone knows that he's not gonna die. Like everyone gets like that's just that very disgruntled and almost, I know better than you, everything is stupid, 13-year-old attitude. And I'm like, right, we know that at the end of the day, Captain America is always going to be a hero, and even if he makes a mistake, he's going to be a good guy because he's Captain America. That's who he is. That's not why I'm reading these stories, and I don't think that's why anyone is telling these stories. I think we tell these stories and are reading these stories because we want to see how they overcome that. And that's the pitch. That's what you are pitching as a creator, is the how.
It's the journey to get there and along the way. And I would also think that applies, For some reason in my head, and it's probably just being a comics reader from when I was young and realizing like, oh, a Star Wars movie is a licensed property, but so is Captain America now, or was then too. It's a licensed property, so it's all kind of that thing. So if you don't go in with that, or don't develop that kind of, hey, it's about the journey, and that's fine. And I've picked up and put down, Spider-Man, Superman, Batman over the years, when it's a run that sounds interesting, and I kind of know those characters are always going to be living, first and second act, and some things might change, but I want to read so and so's run on it because it sounds really great. The art looks great. That's what I want to read it for, not necessarily because I think, oh, Batman retired. That's cool. He's going to stay retired, huh?
And yeah. But to get back to the pitch process, because I know we've derailed a little.
The pitch process.
Yeah, so just to get back to the behind the scenes, behind the doors, after you send stuff in, after you work with your editor a little bit, I think it's a thing, and I talked about this at the Comics Experience panel in Boston with Andy, is I feel like there are a lot of creators who think, I just have to convince the editor. I just have to
Right.
convince the person that I am talking to, that this is good enough and that's it. And unfortunately, that's not it. In some cases, that might be it. In some cases, the smaller, less prestigious concepts, the editor can just approve it and that's that. But most of the time, the editor has their boss, and be it a senior editor or the editor in chief or the publisher, that also has to approve. Does the sales and marketing team think this is something they can sell? Is this a product like Star Wars, where not only Marvel has to approve it, but Lucasfilm has to approve it too, and it has to fit into their stuff?
Yeah.
So yes, you need to obviously convince the editor you're working with that you're the best person for the job, but you also have to convince them so well that they're willing to go to bat for you and your story to every single other ladder or rung of the ladder up the chain.
Yeah. And to give them enough of your story, of your whatever the direction's going to be, to be able to take that and run with it and answer questions. And yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I think, well, taking a little bit of a step back, maybe, for your end as an editor, and I know you've been doing it for a while now, and came up through self-publishing, were there any moments that kind of clicked for you moving into the Marvel world that helped you just, and I know we've already kind of hit on the things that to keep in mind, but where you realize like, oh, these are the big picture things I need to think about as an editor, or I need to convey to a writer or writers.
I mean, the biggest thing is for me is I need to be able to tell what the high concept is right off the bat.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
This is Real Steel meets Spartacus. This is, Nightmare on Elm Street meets My Little Pony.
Right.
God, I want to know what that is
I'm
now.
just writing them down as you go, and I got some pitches I might be submitting.
What's the high concept? I need to be able to tell, pretty much in that first paragraph, who the audience is, what the genre is, and be able to tell right away who I'm selling this to. So not only who am I selling this to, but who's gonna buy it? Because those are two different things too.
That's a great point. Yeah, to have that reader as the part that you think about to the end.
Yeah. Is this a Marvel book? Is this a Valiant book? Is this an Image book? Because that's a thing too, I think, and this is more of a creator-owned thing that I'm sure you and Jim have discussed, but again, it could be the greatest pitch in the world, but it's not a Valiant book.
Right.
It might be an Image book. And that's something I think writers should be keeping in mind when they're creating their pitches is, does this fit with the publisher?
Right. Who does it fit with? Who could I send it to? And that is a great thought to put out there, because that's one of those things kind of starting to do my own comics didn't really occur to me off the bat of, oh, this, because like maybe you, oh, I always wanted to work at Image. But what you've really done is written a book that could be a cool Dark Horse book
Well,
or.
and that and that's the thing. Like, I'm working on developing new IP with Valiant right now, as we expand the universe, and I'm reading some pitches, and they're really cool stories. I would read this story, but it's just not a Valiant book.
Right.
And you know, sometimes, and I think that's a thing that especially newer and less experienced writers, just haven't practiced doing on, and it's definitely something to keep in mind.
And it sounds like a good exercise. And one of the things that we've been talking about behind the scenes, there are a couple of classes that are coming up through the Comics Experience courses. There's a editing and project management class with Mark Sumarek that has a lot of good information from an editorial standpoint and from project managing. And that's been one of the interesting things to see over the years about Comics Experience classes. And different people have taken different stuff at different times, not necessarily because they're going to be an artist, but maybe they want to learn how to write better for an artist. Or they're an artist that wants to start writing more for themselves and they'll take a writing course. But something like the editing class and project management, I think just project management alone is kind of huge for creator-owned. It's so much of a, of course, it's the idea and the putting the thing together, but managing other people, deadlines, just keeping that train moving is a huge part of making, you know, anything on your own. So that alone is a pretty big thing. And then the other course, that I wanted to mention was the freelance writing. And that's one of the things that comes up in there too, is just it's all the stuff you've talked about. Is to be able to get feedback, to know what kind of feedback you need, to know how to collaborate with people is huge. And for folks that are just dipping their toes in or have been doing it for a while, it's like any kind of professional development. I think a lot of times just having other eyes on a project can really get you into that mindset of what it's like when Heather asks you to pitch something. You can know that you've had that experience of, well, I got a lot of feedback on this, and at first I was like, shut up, this is what I wrote, these are my precious words. And then you realize very quickly, like, eh, that's not a good way to do anything. It's kind of a bad way to try to create a thing. And not that you shouldn't be defending your work, but if, you know, five people say like, I don't really get this, what's the motivation? Maybe the motivation isn't clear. Maybe it's clear, you know, in your head, but you just haven't conveyed it in a way that other folks are able to get it. And I think a lot of comics does boil down to just that relationship. And for Heather to be able to say, hey dude, this is not making sense, can you take another pass? And you go, oh, I get it, yeah, that isn't making sense, yeah, let me fix that, I know how to do it. And then that to me is a lot of creative collaboration in general, is just being able to have those back and forth conversations and, you know, ultimately roll with the punches, which isn't Heather coming in saying, I'm changing everything, or editor coming in saying, I'm changing everything, but hey, I don't understand this. The reader's not going to understand it. The artist isn't going to understand it. My bosses aren't going to understand it. So we got to fix it now. And the next part will be even better. So let's go.
Yeah, I think to piggyback on that, I think, you know, obviously the more experience you have writing and working with editors and getting notes is, you know, they're not, I don't think the notes are going to feel as personal because you're used to getting them, right?
Right.
After a certain point. But I think for, again, the newer writers, the less experienced writers that may be working with editors or sending pitches in for the first time, it's just important to keep in mind, don't when an editor is asking questions, as you know, what are they trying to get across with saying this, or what does this mean, or blah 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 blah, whatever. Why is this happening? Don't take it as them challenging your story. Take it as a genuine question.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I ask all the time. Like, I'll ask, like, what's the point of this? What does this mean? And it's not me being like, yeah, but what's the point of this? Like, I'm not, you know, I'm not saying there's no point to it. I'm genuinely wanting to know
Right.
what
You
is the point of this, because it's not clear to me.
just picturing you just eating ice cream and then you just casting the ice cream aside. What's the point of it all? But that
I
is
mean, I do have those days,
but
but
that is a great point, and I think I mentioned it before. I love this clarifying moment from the writer John Grisham. He was in an interview talking about how he writes his books now, And the first thing he does is he has to give his wife a 30-second pitch. Like
Oh,
she's,
yes,
and
yeah.
that's the thing. And if she goes, "No, I don't get it," then he knows he hasn't quite hit it. And that's a guy who's pretty successful in writing that figured out after his first book did not do well and the second book did do well, oh, I need to really think about this as a pitch. And how do I answer those questions that Heather says, yeah, but what's the point? He's able to say, well, the point is this. And you go, oh, well, maybe if you say it like this, it's more clear. And everybody gets it. And you're like, that's right. Everybody gets it. Cool. Let's say it like that. I think that's super valuable. And frankly, the first pitch I ever submitted for a comic, that was the thing I struggled with the most, was honing down that couple of sentences that included the point in a way that you got the story, you got what I was telling, and for me, there was a light bulb moment of I was overcomplicating everything in what I was trying to do because I was trying to tell you my 5-issue epic, and that wasn't the point. It should have been, hey, these families don't get along. The kids are coming together. You know, it's the age-old Romeo and Juliet story. It's just set in Mad Max. And when you start saying it like that, people go, "Oh, I get it." And then you can start to fill in the bigger or the smaller details and the beats as it goes. So to be able to convey, you know, unrequited love and it goes terribly at the end and this is how we get there, and just to give you the point made all the difference in the world. But it really took me a couple of swings to get in there and really understand. And I think it was a lot of me being too precious about it. Like it was a lot of me being too, no, I love the story and I love everything about it and it's going to be great. And I can't wait till you see issue 4. Like, dude, there's not going to be an issue 4 if you can't give me this pitch.
Right. Oh yeah, no, for sure. Oh, and I will say too, just as we wrap up here, I've seen this, I can't tell you in how many pitches I've read this year. But always issue 2 in every single pitch, I'll read, and this is when our story really takes off. And that shouldn't happen in issue 2. That should happen in issue 1.
Right. Well, that's a great note, though. That's a great thing to hear if you see it consistently where people think that, hey, maybe that's just the way the format has evolved and how the story should work. And that is not. And issue ones are hard. I think it's hard to
Issue 1s are so hard.
Set that up. Well, speaking of issue ones, I mentioned Bloodshot off the top. So Bloodshot number one coming out, and I don't know how much you want to talk about. Maybe plot or even how that came together. Maybe that's interesting if you can share any of that information, or otherwise just tell us what it's about and what folks can look for.
I can't really talk about how it came together because I wasn't there when it came together.
Sure.
But Valiant has a brand new Bloodshot series coming out. Number 1 is on sale September 25th, 24th or 25th, whatever that Wednesday is. It is so much fun. Writer Tim Seeley, with the interior art team of Brett Booth, Adelso Corona, and Andrew Dollhouse, with amazing covers by Declan Shalvey. It's so much fun. It is like a 90s action movie in 20 pages, over and over and over. It's great.
Awesome.
And for those who don't know who Bloodshot is, he is a nanite fueled super soldier. So basically he has tech literally in his blood system and his DNA that can, alter his size or his abilities, to make him the best soldier in whatever situation he's in. So he's as if he's the perfect Weapon X soldier that Weapon X was trying to make out of Deadpool and Wolverine and failed to do
Yeah,
so.
very good. Very good. And he could also probably interface with his fridge to check on his ice cream. I think that's
Exactly,
he
exactly.
can
He
do
just he doesn't eat ice cream,
Whoa, no, I'm
but
out. I was in until there.
I know,
It's
but he's a steak guy. He likes his protein.
Nanites. That sounds very cool. And I know that Valiant always has interesting stuff in development and on the stands, and it's been an interesting universe to watch how Valiant does what it does, and I mean that incredibly complimentarily, because it, you know, in the comic book world, as you know better than I do, it's hard to tell stories in a compelling and interesting way. And I feel like Valiant has a really good way that stuff is approached to make it so a casual reader can read it, but especially so Valiant Universe folks can really dig in. And just even just the way stuff is released, it feels like a smart release plan.
Well, thank you so much.
I have a pitch for you later about penguins in the Valiant Universe. I know.
I'm all ears.
I think that's already been discussed, possibly on a previous podcast. Well, you're going New York Comic Con, see Heather again, and you can always find Heather online at Heather Antos. And just doing the math, New York Comic Con's really soon in the grand
It
scheme
is.
of timing.
Yeah.
So get your New York Comic Con plans in order and go there, see some comics, experience panels, amongst other things. Well, I'm sure we'll pepper the next couple episodes, talk a little bit more about what panels you can expect. And anything else you want to mention? Anything else that's
I think we've tackled it all.
excellent. Well, email info@comicsexperience.com, tweet Comic Experience on Twitter, and you can always go to comicsexperience.com and check out what is happening in the classes, including the editing and project management, as well as the freelance writing coming up. And there's a whole list of stuff. And recently we've had Chris Sotomayor on talking about coloring again. Chris's stuff is it he is like a magician, and I don't always understand how things work when even when I see him talk about it and see it in action. But the coloring stuff especially, I always feel like that's, for me, not having a big color background, is so valuable to be able to peek into stuff like that. And you're the conversation that you and Soto had has been one of my favorites of the year, just because he gets into this part. You guys delved into this behind the scenes stuff that I feel like doesn't get talked about a lot and is so integral to the production of comics. And I worry that maybe sometimes it's an afterthought for, because it was for me, frankly, you know, getting into thinking about a book overall and doing creator owned stuff. But man, such a key part of knowing how that process is going to work, much less how the thing should look. All right, well, until next time, everybody, keep making comics.